from Pacifica Network. This is Democracy Now!
This is the most difficult decision I've ever had to make. And while Washington and the media will put many different faces on the decision, it was a personal decision and had only one basis in fact: the well-being of my wonderful family. Nothing more and nothing less.
The director of Central Intelligence, George Tenet, resigns, is the fall guy for George Bush before the presidential election. We'll speak with two veteran CIA analysts and Gore Vidal on Imperial America, Reflections on the United States of Amnesia.
The United States is not a normal country. We're under a homeland. Under military surveillance and military control.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. CIA Director George Tenet has resigned. Another top CIA official is expected to announce his resignation today, marking a major overhaul for the agency that Tenet has headed for 7 years. The CIA claims the departure of Tenet and James Pavitt, the deputy director of operations who oversaw the agency's spies, are unconnected, but they come at a time that the agency is under intense criticism. As early as next month, the 9/11 Commission will release its major findings of what went wrong prior to the September 11th attacks. Meanwhile, the Senate Intelligence Committee is also preparing to release a 400-page report on how the country's intelligence about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction was so inaccurate. Senator Carl Levin told USA Today, quote, "It's a very hard-hitting report. It's highly critical of the CIA." The agency was given a classified version of the report last month and was asked for its comment. Some say Tenet may have been forced out. Senator Bob Graham told the New York Times, quote, "I suspect there was some push out of office." We'll have more on Tenet's resignation in a few minutes. President Bush's trip to Europe to mark the 60th anniversary of D-Day is being greeted by wide opposition in Italy and France. In Italy, 10,000 police officers have been deployed in Rome. Massive protests have forced Bush to cancel a planned trip to the historic Piazza Venezia, where he was scheduled to lay a wreath at Italy's Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. In France, the Financial Times is reporting the government has banned all demonstrations in Paris during the president's visit. Agence France-Presse is reporting the United States is scrambling to soften harsh criticism of U.S. troops in Iraq in a UN human rights report to be released this week. The report was originally scheduled to be released 4 days ago, but it was held up after the U.S. asked for more time to contribute their side of the story. The report accuses U.S. forces of committing, quote, "systematic gross violations of human rights and humanitarian law in Iraq." In news from Iraq, the country's leading Shiite cleric, the Ayatollah Sistani, has given his backing to the interim government. Meanwhile, UN envoy Lakhdar Brahimi has described the head of the U.S. occupation, Paul Bremer, in unusually blunt terms. He said, quote, "Bremer's the dictator of Iraq. He has the money. He has the signature." The Washington Post reports two Marines have pled guilty to electronically shocking an Iraqi prisoner. CNN has sued Florida's elections office to force them to hand over a list of possible felons who could be purged from voter rolls before the November elections. The state has compiled a list of possible felons that it sends to county elections officials who then review the list with their voting rolls. After the 2000 election, an investigation by BBC reporter Greg Palast found thousands of eligible voters were illegally purged from the election rolls in Florida because their names were similar to those of convicted felons. In Israel, President Ariel Sharon has fired two conservative cabinet members who have opposed his plan for an Israeli pullout from the Gaza Strip. In Afghanistan, the international group Doctors Without Borders has suspended its work in the country after five members of its team were shot dead in an ambush earlier this week. The Taliban claim responsibility for the attack that killed a Norwegian doctor and workers from Belgium, the Netherlands, and two people from Afghanistan. In Venezuela, it appears opponents of President Hugo Chavez have forced a recall vote to determine if Chavez can stay in office. The head of the National Elections Council announced Thursday that based on early projections, enough signatures had been collected to force the recall. Today is the 15th anniversary of the Tiananmen massacre in China, when the government killed hundreds during a student uprising. The New York Times is reporting the Chinese government has taken great measures to block any protests on the anniversary. Many human rights activists and dissidents have been put under house arrest. The Asia Times reports special police forces have been trained to counter initiatives by students and political activists on the anniversary. And universities have been put under surveillance around the square itself. The government has posted vans at entrances, limiting access to the area. The Chinese government has made commemorating June 4th in any way illegal. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And welcome to all of our listeners and viewers as well who are across the country. Well, CIA Director George Tenet resigned yesterday, citing, quote, personal reasons. Tenet, who was the second longest-serving director of Central Intelligence, informed Bush of his decision in an hour-long White House meeting Wednesday night. In what the New York Times describes as a, quote, almost bizarre announcement, the president revealed the news in a hurriedly arranged appearance before television cameras before leaving on a trip to Europe. Later in the day, Tenet addressed CIA employees to tell them of his reason for stepping down.
CIA Director George Tenet announced his resignation despite his claims. Many analysts say Tenet's a fall guy for an administration plagued by accusations of misconduct. In recent months, the Bush administration has attempted to lay much of the blame for its false claims about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, its handling of 9/11, and its justification for the war in Iraq on Tenet. The move also came amid a storm over an alleged Pentagon leak of highly classified intelligence to U.S.-backed Iraqi exile leader Ahmed Chalabi. After the announcement, Chalabi charged Tenet himself was behind the allegations against him. In his speech to CIA employees yesterday, Tenet praised President Bush.
Most difficult decision I've ever had to make. And while Washington and the media will put many different faces on the decision, it was a personal decision and had only one basis in fact, the well-being of my wonderful family. Nothing more and nothing less.
CIA Director George Tenet. Today we're joined by two longtime CIA analysts. We're joined by Melvin Goodman, senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, former CIA and State Department analyst. He's director of the Center's National Security Project. He's got a new book that he has co-authored called Bush League Diplomacy, How the Neoconservatives Are Putting the World at Risk. And we're joined by Ray McGovern, 27-year career analyst with the CIA, one of the top daily briefers of Vice President George Bush, co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPs. We welcome you both to Democracy Now!
Good morning, Amy.
It's good to have you both with us. Mel Goodman, let's start with you. Your reaction to the resignation and the acceptance by President Bush of George Tenet.
Well, the obvious reaction is it was long overdue. This is a director who is partly responsible for two of the worst intelligence failures in the history of the CIA. That would be 9/11 and the Iraqi War, the famous slam dunk remark that he could produce the intelligence, which said he could politicize the intelligence. And there were numerous failures before those two that were also serious. The Indian test failure in 98, the bombing of the Sudan pharmaceutical factory in 98, the bombing of the Chinese embassy in 99, in which he later claimed he didn't know the CIA was doing operational planning for bombing missions in the war in the Balkans. And also, people talk about the Powell speech, which I think was an example of politicized intelligence, the speech that Powell gave at the UN in February 2003. But the fact of the matter is the CIA shouldn't have been writing that speech. In their charter, it clearly states they're not an agency that can write policy statements or political statements for cabinet officials. And I think one of the decisive remarks, it may be the precipitating factor in Tenet's decision to leave, was now Powell turning on the CIA. He's been very blunt in the last few weeks. And on May the 16th, Powell accused the CIA of deliberately misleading him. That was extremely strong language. So it was these failures that were the reason for him leaving, and the fact that all of these commissions and committees are about to report, and everyone is going to take George Tenet and his CIA over the coals.
Ray McGovern, to what degree do you see this as basically Tenet taking the fall for all of the failures? To what degree is he directly responsible, or is he just a fall guy?
Well, I think that he is taking the fall here. George Tenet is known for being willing to please, and he does face the prospect of this Senate Intelligence Committee coming out with a very acerbic denunciation of his tenure and his mistakes with respect specifically to weapons of mass destruction. So it's a confluence of that and the fact that Iraq is really going to hell in a handbasket. I mean, it's very clear that we have a debacle there now. Even some moderate Republicans are calling for some kind of accountability. Somebody must be running this show. Somebody must be held accountable. And, of course, you don't want to hold the president accountable. The buck used to stop there, but it no longer does. And so you go to the penultimate accountable person, or the anti-penultimate accountable person, in this case, a functionary like George Tenet. So you serve him up as a sacrificial lamb, and you hope that when these new accusations come out with respect to malfeasance in office having to do with the CIA performance, then you can say, well, yeah, but he's gone now, you know, and hope that it will just kind of blow over. The other thing to point out here is that all this focus on weapons of mass destruction is contrived. You could see it in Woodward's book, you know, when Woodward talks about this slam dunk business. For those who don't remember, the date is December 21st, 2002. Bush has been given this briefing by Tenet and his deputy, and he says, is that as good as we have on weapons of mass destruction? And Tenet rises up and says, sir, it's a slam dunk. And he says that two times, and we know he did because Condoleezza Rice confirms the story, and she was there. Okay, now why do they set him up that way? Well, they set him up that way because they portray a president who is sincerely interested in finding out about these weapons of mass destruction, but lo and behold, he's misled by this errant DCI, errant Director of Central Intelligence, and so he's not to blame. It's the intelligence. Now, the real situation, for those who watch it closely, is that the decision to make war on Iraq antedated that incident by almost a year, or maybe more than a year. In other words, before there was any national intelligence estimate they decided to make this war in Iraq. They only came to the intelligence agency when they needed to deceive Congress into approving this war, and that's when the estimate was ginned up and was really molded to scare everyone with this mushroom cloud business. And so the estimate and the weapons of mass destruction only have to do with persuading Congress to approve the war, and Colin Powell himself has admitted that. Weapons of mass destruction, I'll just finish up on this, have nothing to do with the decision to make war. The decision to make war was a neoconservative, strategic, ideological decision that the U.S. must assert its influence by military means if necessary in all key areas of the world, especially ones that have oil, and especially ones that pose some sort of a threat to Israel. And those were the twin reasons for that. They had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction or with presumed ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda.
We're talking with veteran CIA analysts Ray McGovern and Mel Goodman. You also have a number two man, James Pavitt, senior intelligence official, head of the CIA's clandestine service, announcing his retirement expected today as well, heading the agency's best known division, which is responsible for gathering foreign intelligence. Mel Goodman, can you talk about the significance of Pavitt?
Well, the only thing that comes to mind was watching Pavitt during the 9/11 commission hearings. He gave a very weak performance in trying to explain the Directorate of Operations to the panel. He gave a very weak accounting of what the Directorate of Operations was capable of doing. And you have to remember that Tenet has taken a lot of credit now for rebuilding the Directorate of Operations, and that's really nonsense. If there was any rebuilding of the Directorate of Operations, it was after 9/11, because that's when the budget increases came. What Tenet was guilty of, and Pavitt is part of this problem, is that he declared a war on terrorism himself in 1998, 3 years before the president did, but never did anything about it. And I think that's what he's going to be held responsible for when all of these 9/11 commissions and staff studies come out. War on terrorism, but no additional personnel, no additional analysts, and no correction of the serious analytical mistakes that were made by the CIA during his tenure. The problem at the CIA was essentially an analytical problem, which Tenet was never really seriously interested in. He left that to others, particularly his deputy, John McLaughlin, who now will be the interim director. It was the director of operations that Tenet was genuinely interested in, and I think Pavitt was a very weak director, and it was probably time for him to go when Tenet left as well.
Ray McGovern, I'd like to ask you, the New York Times is reporting in its story today that it's unlikely that President Bush will name a successor before the November elections because the administration is afraid of what might come out in a confirmation hearing in the Senate. In essence, basically the political decision is trumping the need to have an ongoing director for the next 6 months. Your reaction to that possibility?
Understand why they would do that. John McLaughlin is not going to make any waves. He's sort of a clone of Tenet. He'll do what he's told. He won't wander off the reservation, as we say here in Washington. He's completely dependable, that is, from the administration's point of view. And so why not just keep somebody like that in office rather than face the embarrassment, frankly, of going to confirmation proceedings where all the sturdy linen will be once again aired. So I don't condone it. What you should do is have somebody in there who can whip the place into shape, who can reestablish the ethic of analysis, which is you try to tell the truth to power. You try to tell it like it is without fear or favor. That has long since gone by the board, and that's what you need in terms of a director of Central Intelligence. But there's no prospect of that happening between now and the election, and so we can understand why the president would be just as happy having John McLaughlin and people that are, quote, dependable, end quote, in the same way that George Tenet was dependable, namely, they'll do what they're told.
This morning, Donald Rumsfeld told sailors and Marines on the USS Essex, a helicopter carrier in port at Singapore, that better inside information from U.S. intelligence would have prevented the September 11th attacks. I wanted to end by asking Mel Goodman, longtime CIA analyst, about President Bush taking on a private attorney, one for Richard Secord of Iran-Contra fame, one of the key figures there, for in the case of Valerie Plame, the undercover CIA operative who was actually investigating weapons of mass destruction, who was outed by high-level Bush administration people, who's being that whole case being investigated right now.
Well, I think there are two major things going on right now, and both are cover-ups, and both, to me, resemble Watergate. One is the cover-up of the outing of Valerie Plame. The fact that he has talked to a personal lawyer, I think, is extremely important, because last month the grand jury very quietly asked the White House for all of the telephone records from Air Force One. This means the outing of Plame could reach into the president's office. I've always felt that it was the vice president, Cheney, and his special assistant, Louis Libby, who were responsible for the outing, because Cheney had nothing but contempt for Joe Wilson and his trip to Africa, which exposed the fabrication of this intelligence that ended up not only in the State of the Union message, but in the October 2002 estimate as well. But at the same time, since you raised Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, there's even a greater cover-up going on here with regard to the abuse and torture that were taking place in various prisons and holding areas in Iraq, resembling what was going on in Afghanistan and in Guantanamo. This wasn't the work of six or seven enlisted people from Appalachia. This was ordered by the highest levels of the government. And I think we're seeing real dereliction of duty here and examples of a very serious cover-up. I think the fact of the matter is that the wheels are now falling off the cart. Powell is saying he's not going to go beyond the end of the year. Condi Rice is hinting she won't remain in the National Security Council by the end of the year. Rumsfeld has no credibility and will have to go, and now Tenet is going. That's four wheels off a cart. That doesn't leave much for a cart in terms of balance.
Mel Goodman and Ray McGovern, we want to thank you very much for being with us. Mel Goodman has just co-authored a new book, Bush League Diplomacy. Ray McGovern, also with the agency for more than a quarter of a century. This is Democracy Now! When we return, Gore Vidal on Imperial America.
Rulers of the nations, as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you demand? Is it for freedom or our comfort and convenience? Is it to profit for big business we pledge our allegiance? Are we prisoners in the land of the brave and the bold, held by indifference or hearts grown hard and cold? And prove to me, America, that you care. to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you demand?
Sarah Thompson, Is It for Freedom? Here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the largest public media collaboration in the country, broadcasting now on over 220 radio and television stations around the country, on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates, on NPR stations, on public access TV stations, now on PBS, and on Free Speech TV, which is channel 9415 of Dish Network. 2 to 3 stations a week are picking us up. If you would like to pick us up in your community on television or radio, just ask your station. You can get information from our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest for the remainder of the program is a national icon. He is the author of more than 20 novels and 5 plays, one of the best-known chroniclers of American history and politics. His works have been translated into dozens of languages across the globe. He once told a magazine interviewer, quote, "There is not one human problem that could not be solved if people would simply do as I advise." And for more than half a century, he has done just that. I am talking about Gore Vidal.
He began writing poems and stories as a young teenager and published his first novel, Willawa, in 1946 at the age of 21. His grandfather was a senator and his father worked for the Roosevelt administration. But rather than pursue a career in politics, Gore Vidal dedicated himself to writing and critiquing the injustices of American society. Following the publication of the first two of his latest trilogy of books examining the American empire, Vidal was described as the, quote, last noble defender of the American Republic. The third and final book of the trilogy has just been published. It is called Imperial America, Reflections on the United States of Amnesia.
In his latest book, Gore Vidal writes that, quote, "Not since the 1846 attack on Mexico in order to seize California has an American government been so nakedly predatory." He describes the current president as being like a man in one of those dreams who knows he's safe in bed and so can commit any crime he likes in his voluptuous dream. No one can stop him. Gore Vidal joins us now in our Firehouse studio here in Chinatown, Downtown Community Television. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you. This is probably my first encounter in the United States with democracy. And I've lived a long time. And here we are in Chinatown, in the Firehouse. And I feel free. But that we're supposed to in a democracy.
Well, we welcome you.
Thank you.
Why use the word imperial in your title, Imperial America?
Oh, because everyone hates it so much. I remember years ago, Time magazine, in one of its numerous attacks on me, and my first book of essays, which was heaven knows when, 30, 40 years ago, and I referred to the American Empire and things that we were doing that were not very good across the world. And I referred to the empire. And Time magazine dismissed me. That was an awful review. He's the sort of person who thinks that the United States has an empire. Well, we've got Guam, that's true, but that's all we've got. I pointed out that we had troops and so on in over 1,000 other places around the world, which seems imperial to me, but there we are. And ever since then, I've loved the word because it just drives them crazy. Now, everybody uses it. So I'll have to think of something new. Perhaps in the course of this program, we'll get a new word. And if we don't, you get a new word and tell me so I can change over from empire. But we are a world empire, hated by all, and not to mention the least, our own people, since we don't have any money left for anything. So you started to quote something that I had written about Bush, that He's like a kind of crazy kid in a dream. And he thinks he's invulnerable. And he's marching along through a dry forest. And he is lighting matches, dropping them, watching the fires, dropping another one. I'd always assumed, like all good Americans, that he was a hypocrite, particularly in religious matters. And suddenly it began to hit me. He may be another Reagan. He may really believe these are the end times. What difference does it make? The world's going to end anyway. Why save the environment? Save it for what, you know? We're all going to be up there as sunbeams for Jesus. And if he's one of those, well, those of us who can afford it will emigrate, and the others will be with Jesus in a higher sphere.
You talk about about President Bush throwing matches in the forest or lighting matches in the forest. Your book, I thought some of the most powerful parts of it were when you go into all of the outright lies of the Bush administration, and you spend quite a bit of time on his Healthy Forests initiative and his response to wildfires. Could you expound a little bit on that?
Well, part of Imperial America is just sort of a list of the lies that he has told us, and there's a special law against people who lie to the American people, whether they're in the legislative branch of the government, judiciary, or the executive, like the president. He has now told so many lies that he knew to be lies and that we know to be lies about everything that he can be on, I think it's 12 counts, he can be impeached immediately without much fuss if you had a majority of people who wanted to impeach him in the House of Representatives. And then he would go on trial in the Senate, as poor Bill Clinton found when he lied about sex, which in my day, that is what gentlemen were supposed to do. Or if everybody told the truth about sex, half the divorced couples in the United States would be in Leavenworth. What are they there for? What are their lawyers there for? Of course you lie. I didn't do it. She did it. No, I didn't do it. He did it. And here are the names and places. Well, there's some things in which it is gentlemanly to lie. To lie about the State of the Union, to lie about the fact of the empire, what the empire is doing. I've been following your program this morning and Mr. Tennant's resignation, and I thought, what a nice diversion. He's a figure of no consequence at all. It's like, you know, you fire a secretary because she just simply didn't come to work for a month or so and got the work wrong. He is of no consequence at all, Mr. Tennant. Now he's gone.
Let's hear President Bush just in the last few days giving the graduation address at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs.
On this day, in 1944, General Eisenhower sat down at his headquarters in the English countryside and wrote out a message to the troops who would soon invade Normandy. Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, he wrote, the eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. Each of you receiving a commission today in the United States military will also carry the hopes of free people everywhere. As your generation assumes its own duties during a global conflict, that will define your careers, you will be called upon to take brave action and serve with honor. In some ways, this struggle we're in is unique. In other ways, it resembles the great clashes of the last century between those who put their trust in tyrants and those who put their trust in liberty. Our goal, the goal of this generation, is the same. We will secure our nation and defend the peace through the forward march of freedom.
President Bush speaking at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. President Bush comparing the conflict in Iraq to World War II today, headed to Normandy, just met with the Pope this morning on the anniversary of D-Day. Your response, Gore Vidal?
Well, I'd like to be a fly on that wall where he meets the Pope, who highly disapproves of our imperial mission around the world. The Pope, although he's generally interested in sex only, as that is part of the Roman Catholic doctrine of power over the individual, the Pope is a good guy on matters of war and peace and doesn't like war. And he doesn't like Bush. He doesn't like the United States at this moment. So I would think that was a very chilly meeting between the two of them. It was chilly when Ronald Reagan went to see him, but Reagan went to sleep, and it was a wonderful meeting. You know, the Pope said a few prayers, and there was Ron snoring softly, and everybody saying, it's been a very long trip, you know, from America here, and there is Reagan sound asleep in front of all the cameras. But to compare the preemptive wars of Mr. Bush, which are totally illegal, which offend, if I may paraphrase Thomas Jefferson, the decent opinion of mankind. The entire world is horrified by what we do. He goes into an innocent country called Afghanistan, knocks it down. One of his cabinet members knocks it down. Then he gives contracts to rebuild it to his vice president, Halliburton. Ditto, then he knocks down another country, which has done nothing to us. I said, well, why don't you hit Denmark? You know, there are beautiful buildings there. It'll cost a lot more to put them up again, but it'll keep, you know, a lot of money flowing in from the treasury into rebuilding Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen. Hit Denmark, was I kept saying all through the... No one listens to me, of course, but I thought that would be better fun. But I'm one of the few people, I suppose, at this table. I should tell you that we're seated at a most beautiful table in one of the most beautiful studios downtown. Anyone who thinks this place is a poor program, I must say I've never seen such wealth, you know, and riches, the highest technology everywhere I look. I mean, we're under laser scrutiny here. This is a superb studio. And sitting here feeling that the world is going to be all right, which it is not, to compare the mess that Bush has made in the world with preemptive wars, which I thought had gone out of fashion with Adolf Hitler. Now, do not write in, do not call, and do not march in the streets that I have compared this evil man, George Bush, to Adolf Hitler, when we all know it's, you know, Mother Teresa, come back, just the wrong sex. Bush is about as evil as you can get in the way of an American president. The fact that he doesn't know what he's doing is a mitigating factor. I mean, there are times that you say, I say he's sleepwalking. He's just wandering along, and he says the most absurd things, and our craven media, which is getting a little better now, I don't know if you enjoy as much as I do, the New York Times' mea culpa. They've figured out that they've been lying all along and that Judith Miller, their great inside person about weapons of mass destruction, she was getting it from Shalabi, who is a kind of con man, and they were making it up, and it just sounded good. And the Times, it's on the front page, is weapons of mass destruction. We've got to go in there. We've got to knock these people around. Well, when you have a press that no longer does its job, you have an uninformed electorate. We have an electorate, really, that doesn't know what to believe about anything, and you can't blame it on the people. They're just not told the truth. And so I've gone a long way around to say that there is no way of comparing the series of messes that the Bush people have done. I am a veteran. Brace yourself out there, because you only hear from, by and large, from what I call the yellow rose of Texas, which is Mr. Bush, who, being a good yellow rose from Texas, stayed out of all the wars, and Cheney stayed out of them. I, like a fool at 17, enlisted in the Army in the year 1943 and served 3 years in the Second World War, because that was the thing you did. If your country had been attacked, that's what you do. Nowadays, if your country is attacked, you immediately get a contract to rebuild something. Then perhaps you have a member of the cabinet who knocks down cities, and then you go over to the vice president, get his company, Halliburton, to rebuild them with Treasury money. So, I mean, you can see them working. Hey, Rumsfeld, I want to build, you know, I have this dream. You can hear this coming from one of them. I want a railroad station right in the center of Baghdad. I mean, they need it, but an old-fashioned one, you know, with towers on it and something beautiful, you know. And no cement block, you know. I want brick. And you can hear them at this, and then we rebuild it. So between the destructiveness and all the lies that are told, there's all the corruption. In a proper country, the corruption be reported. We can't find it. And then the president, he's like Lyndon Johnson, if you remember, toward the end of Lyndon Johnson's reign and the Vietnam War was going, he couldn't speak anywhere except to army bases. And now we have this little terrier marching around, yep, 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 yep. I'm a wartime president. Just like the big guys.
Gore Vidal is our guest, and he has written a new book. It's called Imperial America, the United States of Amnesia. We'll be back with him in a minute. This is Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest is Gore Vidal with yet another book. This one, Imperial America, Reflections on the United States of Amnesia. That's the second part, Amnesia.
I'm glad you remembered that, because I keep forgetting.
And speaking of amnesia, the
One of the big sections in your book is the privatizing of the American elections. And many people have almost forgotten Florida already, but we're now in a new year, a new election year. And already, as we reported earlier on the show, CNN has sued the state of Florida to try to get the newest list of felons about to be purged from the rolls in Florida. And you have a lot to say about what could possibly happen with these elections and what the nation is still not dealt with about the last election.
Well, the sinister thing, or certainly a sinister thing, has been the privatizing of the elections and outsourcing, to use the latest cant phrase, is that for some time now, people have been dissatisfied with the dangling chads and so on. So there's a special act of Congress calling for a lot of money to be spent in order to bring up to date the voting machinery. And it's a touch screen stuff. It's supposed to be very popular with the voters. Well, it's the most easily corrupted of all because it's you touch the screen and you vote for Kerry, and then your vote suddenly is transformed almost immediately, and there's no track of it ever registering anywhere but in the hearts of heaven. The votes are counted, not in L.A. County, let us say, where you may have voted, which is the normal thing to do. They're counted in 34th Street. I go into great detail in the course of Imperial America into how three companies have absolutely got hold of the voting machinery. And Diebold is the number one. And in the state of California, where I'm living, at least the California legislature has suddenly got them, backed them up, and said in Orange County, which is one of the largest counties in L.A. during the recall election, recently something like 7,000 votes. Nobody can track them. There is no record that you voted. They call it a paper trail, to make a paper trail. They don't have that. And in other words, I'll tell you one thing about how they get away with it. You see the difficulty I'm having trying to explain it to the kindly people who are listening to it. Well, it's complicated how they steal elections, but it can be done, and it is all done electronically. Well, at least California has now called into doubt these machines, and there's talk of not using them. In other words, the happy look that occasionally you see on George W. Bush's Yellow Rose of Texas face, he knows something we don't know. He knows he could lose the whole election and still win the votes because the machinery can be played around with. The head of Diebold, which is the number one manufacturer of these machines, is on record as saying he's a working Republican, more power to him. He's a working Republican, and he's already written a fundraising letter to the voters of Ohio, which is a swing state, saying, well, I'll do everything I can to make sure that Ohio votes for President Bush. Well, noble partisanship, and we're a free country, you can work for anybody you want to. But don't make the machines, and don't make them unaccountable. And absolutely, it's difficult to find what goes on in these machines. So California, the legislature has already asked them to re-examine and perhaps get rid of them. But you see, I mean, November is almost here. They're all over Georgia. They're all over Maryland. And you could well lose the election if you had friends in high places with the three companies that produce these machines. You can change the election. Everybody could vote for Kerry, and suddenly there is Bush once again, an unelected president, but serving his time and quacking away, you know, as though he were the real thing. Wartime president. I'm a wartime president. Why, if we had any media in the country that was honest, and we don't, somebody would have pointed out this is not wartime. You cannot have a war without a declaration, Article 2 of the Constitution of the United States declaring war, and that should be the House of Representatives. That is the law of the land. And he says, I'm a wartime president. Well, good for him. But he isn't. There's no war except what he has declared on Afghanistan and what he has declared on Iraq. There is no war. And why they don't stop him right there, I would switch him right off the air, and I'd have a voice going, the President Bush is under a misapprehension that we are at war. We're not at war. He's at war. Unfortunately, those in the armed services must do what the commander-in-chief. I'm the commander-in-chief, you know, of all this whole thing. You know, I'm running it. And then I'm going to send troops. Do you get the first person? I spent 3 years in World War II. I never heard President Roosevelt say, I'm going to send troops to China, and I will then send them to Southeast Asia. President Roosevelt never said I. We are the United States. We will do this. Or together with our allies, we will do this. So it's, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. How a fool like this can be tolerated in a country whose median IQ cannot be much lower than that of inner Slovenia, that they allow him to say ridiculous things and get away with it. So in the absence of a real New York Times, instead of a bleating paper now beginning to apologize for its numerous mistakes about having convinced us all that there were weapons of mass destruction, hence a war, I've never felt the country was so naked as it is now. There is no official voice. There is no representative government. Congress doesn't represent anybody. And the Supreme Court, I must say, why some of them are not in jail, I don't know. But be that as it may, to strike a happy note.
We're talking to Gore Vidal. His latest book is Imperial America, the United States of Amnesia. Gore Vidal, born at the Cadet Hospital at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. What can people do now? You've described grave problems, and elections being stolen, a war not declared but engaged in.
I should think if there were a great and eloquent voice opposite to that of Bush, in other words, if Kerry could only take off and start to say the things that I have been saying somewhat lightheartedly, if he could say them a bit more heavy-heartedly, then you'd have an opposition. Then you would have a big turnout. You might have a real vote going on. It wasn't until I watched, to my amazement, my cousin Albert Gore give that wonderful speech up at NYU, was it? Yeah. He sounded, you know, the Gore blood. I'm making no pun, but the Gore blood was at last rippling. You know, we are a political family, and we go back to the beginning of the country, and we were the founders, amongst the founders, of the old Party of the People, which meant we're original populists, and we came into public view during Reconstruction after the Civil War, at the end of the 19th century. And we are, always have been populist, and suddenly Albert, whom I just put me to sleep in the year 2000 when he was running, and I thought, where is the Gore blood? I mean, you know, there's one thing we know how to do is make a speech, and we certainly know where our interests are, which is to preserve, protect, and defend the people of the United States against the great financial powers that govern. And suddenly there he is up there at NYU, and he sounds like the president we didn't get. I mean, he was elected president, and I think this bothers George W. Bush every day. If somebody told him about it, you know, I have a funny feeling he doesn't know that he lost the election because he sounds so confident. I think he thought he was elected by a landslide, you know, and anything he wants to do, he can do, because I'm a wartime president. And suddenly, here was Albert, a peacetime president who wants to maintain the peace. You know, we made our fortune in the world through making things that people wanted. Some of it lousy stuff, whether from lousy TV shows to soft drinks, blue jeans, and so on. As long as we were selling the world stuff, we were a proper commercial nation. Nothing wrong with that. Doesn't sound glamorous. But now that we're in the Julius Caesar business, to be represented by the Yellow Rose of Texas has been, you know, sad.
The 9/11 Commission report?
Well, the 9/11, I haven't heard any final. There's no final report yet.
No, there isn't. But in terms of the kind of investigation that we have seen.
Well, I'm astonished that they allowed anything. And then I was not in the least surprised that urgent questions were not really asked or answered. I mean, it's better than nothing. I mean, you know, we only get a tiny bone of democracy. I can say that on this program. Which is dedicated to democracy. Incidentally, for your listeners, viewers, the word democracy is not only never mentioned in the Constitution of the United States, but democracy was something that the Founding Fathers hated. This is not generally known because it shouldn't be known, but it is. I wrote a little book about it called Inventing a Nation that Yale published last year. Our founders feared two things. One was the rule of the people, which they thought would just be a mess. And they feared tyranny, which we'd gone through King George III. And so they wanted a republic, a safe place for men, white men of property, to do business in. This is not ideal, but it's better than what we have. So here we are bringing democracy to the poor Afghans, but only to real democracy, of course, in the prisons, which we specialize in everywhere. And which, one interesting thing that came out of all that mess was now the world knows how we treat Americans in American prisons. All that behavior, the humiliation and violence and so on, that is typical of not so much federal prisons somewhat, but state prisons, municipal prisons, detention centers. This is the nation of torture. And those who disagree with me, you can write an angry letter at this very moment, if you can write at all. Sit down and write an angry letter to the commander-in-chief and have him examine the prisons.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Gore Vidal.
Well, I just barely started.
Imperial America, Reflections on the United States of Amnesia. And we'll have you back to continue.
Thank you.
This has been Democracy Now! If you'd like to get a copy, you can call 1-800-881-2359, 1-800-881-2359. You can go to our website at democracynow.org. For this and other Democracy Now! Programs, Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer with help from Rich Kim. Special thanks to our director, Angela Alston, John Randolph, Simba Russo, Chris Zucker. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!